Hi, I'm a pair of French-Canadian twins conjoined at the ass, Taylor.
And I'm a soundtrack that sounds like theremin's on meth, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. This week we watched 1972's Sisters, directed by Brian De Palma, starring Margot Kidder, Jennifer Salt, William Finley, and Charles Darning. Just another fine entry into the realm of pervert cinema.
Yeah. Brian De Palma is, like, I'd say about 75% of the time directing with his dick.
Oh, yeah.
And I do love it for him. Like, I have not seen nearly enough of his movies, but all of his movies that I have seen are, like, so... They're such pervert shit.
And we love that for him.
I do love that for him. Oh, I love this movie. Nobody talks about this movie, and it's so good.
I'm shocked no one talks about this movie, because it's so much all the time. And considering that Malignant came out recently, how was no one drawing, like, a million parallels between this movie and Malignant?
Okay, so, like, before we even start, I feel the need to say we're going to be spoiling the fuck out of this movie. It's impossible to talk about this movie without talking about the twist. But also, the twist in this movie is, like, so obvious.
Yeah, if you've seen a movie like this, like, if you've seen Malignant or Basket Case, you've probably figured it out.
Yeah.
But even so,
it's pretty important that you go into this episode knowing that we are going to be absolutely just spoiling the shit out of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we usually spoil movies that we review, but, like, I feel it's important to say this particular movie up front. Like, if you're interested in the movie, I would say definitely go in blind. It's a lot of fun when you don't know what's coming.
Yep.
And even if you guess the twist, it is so crazy that it really, there's so much other stuff going on that really guessing the twist doesn't even really matter.
I will say that at one point this movie does sort of, it mentions the death of an infant in a way that could potentially be upsetting. And considering that we did not give a trigger warning for Malignant, I think we should probably do it for this one.
Yeah, I would say, that, and I would also say that there are mentions of police brutality and racism that they don't factor very heavily into the meat of the plot itself. It is brought up as, like, a background element, so, you know, just be aware that characters are going to be mentioning that at points.
Mm-hmm.
Like, psychiatric and medical abuse.
Yeah, yeah.
Big trigger warning for that. Lots of therapists taking advantage of their positions over their patients.
A lot of gaslighting.
A lot of gaslighting. That's about all the trigger warnings I can think of.
So this was my first time watching this movie. I sat down on the porch of my house where my parents have a smart TV, and I turned this movie on and I had an experience.
Yep.
Oh boy.
That's the correct way to view this movie.
Truly. What are your memories with this movie, Taylor?
I connect this movie very deeply with a period of my life that I like to call the summer of horrors. And by horrors, I mean, it was like right when COVID happened.
Ugh.
And I had just finished my spring semester of college, junior year. And I was going back, you know, in the fall. So I had, you know, this period of summertime where I was just kind of sitting around my house during that, like, quarantine era, like, doing nothing. And I couldn't get a job because nowhere was hiring new people. I didn't have a job at that point. And so basically, for 2 months, I sat around my house and did nothing and was deeply mentally ill. I don't mean to get depressing, but I watched a whole lot of movies during that period. And this was one of them. And I just remember, like, again, like most days that summer, was not in a great mood. Turned this on, it turned my day around instantly.
I can certainly fucking see where that, because, oh boy, this movie's so much all the time.
5 minutes in, I was like, I forgot what depression is. It cured me. I don't have it anymore.
Wow, I can't believe it.
It's all gone. Yeah, it was like this, and, like, I also watched Psycho 2 for the first time that summer. Lots of, like, movies that would become, like, inextricable parts of my personality were formed during that, like, quarantine summer where I was just, like, unable to get a job, stuck in my house. Everyone else in my family was working, So I was just by myself all the time watching movies. It was certainly a time, but you know what? It gave me sisters, and for that I will be eternally grateful, because this movie's delightful.
It is such a time. It's
such a movie.
It's one of the movies ever. Again, much like Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, it is a movie that only the 70s could have produced.
God, that's so true. They did remake this movie.
Oh.
In like 2006 or 2007. Chloe Sevigny plays the detective character. I haven't seen it. By all accounts, it's fairly mediocre, so I'm not really super interested in seeing it. But, you know, they did attempt to do this not in the 70s.
Huh.
So how would you summarize this film?
I have no way to summarize this film, so I'm going to turn to Google, which is where I usually go for my little synopsi, if you will.
Hit me with that good synopsis.
Inquisitive journalist Grace Collier is horrified when she witnesses her neighbor, fashion model Danielle Breton, violently murder a man. Panicking, she calls the police, but when the detectives arrive on the scene and find nothing amiss, Grace is forced to take matters into her own hands. Her first move is to recruit private investigator Joseph Larch, who helps her to uncover a secret about Danielle's past that has them both seeing double.
Once again, much like Valley of the Dolls and The Lighthouse, it's like, yes,
but also no.
But it's so much more than that.
I like the emphasis that this puts on the detective, on the private investigator, who is like at most a bit character.
He's in like two scenes.
Yeah, I mean, yes, that is the primary synopsis of this movie. However, much like many pervert movies, it's so much more.
This truly is pervert cinema. Like, it's so horned up.
So horned up, so fucked up. It's everything.
It's horned up about the grossest things, too.
Truly.
Like, I love the scene, like, towards the beginning of the movie, where they're like on the couch about to fuck, and he's like feeling up her leg, and then he like lifts the skirt of her nightgown up, and you see her fucking massive scar,
yeah,
on the side of her body. Oh my god, that's like, whoa. When you know, you're like, oh yeah, oh, it's this type of movie.
I literally wrote just rut-row in my notes.
Rut-row.
It's like, it's very Cronenberg.
Almost. Totally. I saw a lot of Dead Ringers and other like weird Cronenberg stuff in this movie, but like particularly Dead Ringers.
Mm-hmm. Also, like, if this movie didn't inspire Malignant, I will eat every article of clothing in my wardrobe. Like,
honestly, I didn't even think about this movie when I watched Malignant, but like now I want to go back and watch Malignant and like look for references to this movie.
I was immediately like, just in general, this feels very Malignant. Like the twin, like the conjoined twins whole thing. Like, yeah, that's Malignant, baby. But
it
like
super is. It super is.
I think we're talking about influences on this movie. We need to talk about the biggest one, Mr. Alfred Hitchcock.
I mean, if it's a De Palma movie, there's like, gonna be some Hitchcock references in there, but this movie takes, like, the usual, like, smattering of Hitchcock references that are in most De Palma movies, and, like, ramps it up to 11, because this movie is basically, like, a really trashy 70s version of, like, Psycho and Rear Window, like, thrown into a blender.
This movie is what happens if, like, Psycho, Rear Window, and Spellbound had, like, the nastiest, most disgusting sex you can imagine.
Yeah.
Like, that is, this movie is the product of that.
You know, I didn't even think of Spellbound, but, like, yeah, you're so right with the therapist character. Like, this is so Freudian. Like, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's very psychosexual.
Yeah, super, super psychosexual.
As most pervert movies are.
Honestly, I saw a lot of people on Letterboxd being like, this is just like if Alfred Hitchcock movies were horny. And I'm like, have you seen an Alfred Hitchcock movie?
Have you seen an Alfred? Like,
I'm sorry. If there's one thing about Alfred Hitchcock, it's that he was horny on main all the time.
All the time.
Watching, like, Alfred Hitchcock movies is like a window into seeing an old man's kinks. Like,
truly, like, he was out here making some of the first pervert movies.
Yes, absolutely.
He is the grandfather of pervert movies.
Have we forgotten the scene in Psycho where Norman watches Marion undress and is like clearly masturbating?
Have we forgotten Vertigo.
Just the entirety of Vertigo.
Just all of Vertigo. Anyway. Okay, we probably shouldn't just sit here and, like, name Alfred Hitchcock movies for the next
But we've seen hour. Them.
We have. We sure have.
I was obsessed with Alfred Hitchcock in high school, which then led me into being really obsessed with Brian De Palma. Because Brian De Palma really is, like, Alfred Hitchcock for, like, horribly trashy perverts, which is so up my alley.
And, like, if you're a film student, you're watching Hitchcock movies. Like, you just are. Like, if you cannot get out of any film program without having seen a Hitchcock movie, and if you did, someone fucked up in your curriculum.
Yeah. I mean, like, we joke, he's the forefather of pervert cinema, but, like, he is the influence on, like, all horror forever.
Ever, yeah.
Yeah. Brian De Palma makes no secret, especially in this movie, of the fact that he is very influenced by Hitchcock, and I love it for him. I love directors who wear their influences on their sleeves.
It's so good. Thank you, sir, for your service.
Thank you. Yeah, for real. I love the use of split screen in this movie, too, which is a De Palma, like, stylistic staple, and it's put to such good use in this film.
So good. So good. Delicious.
Oh, that's that scene where you see Danielle and Emile, like, hiding the body and fixing up the apartment while Grace is, like, trying to talk to the cops and, like, they're not listening to her. And it's like, oh, like, just everything about it is set up so perfectly and beautifully because you as the audience member are watching that scene going like, oh my God, you guys are literally just, like, standing around and talking while they're, like, cleaning up the apartment, like, and all the blood mm-hmm. and like, you're missing it because you're arguing about bullshit.
Yep. And, like, I mean, props to De Palma. This film has perhaps one of the most accurate portrayals of cops in media. Because
this is ACAB cinema. Like,
they're useless, they're racist, and they're corrupt, baby. That's
I adore how this movie just pulls absolutely no punches in calling out especially, like, 70s New York, like, the police system. Like, anybody who says, like, horror is so political nowadays.
Watch this movie.
Watch this movie, because this movie, like, fully calls out not only police brutality, but, like, police racism. Like, Grace literally says over the phone, like, no, the cops are just refusing to investigate this because the killer is a white woman and the guy who was murdered was a black man. Like, she fully says it out loud. Like, it's so delightful to see a movie just be so...
It's more outwardly political than, like, a lot of movies today. Like, usually this kind of thing is reserved for, like, metaphor or, like, you know, subtextual implication. Like, no, this movie just says, hey, the cops are racist, and that's just how it is.
Like, yeah, I also really, I mean, I don't like it because, like, it sucks. But, like, I think it's interesting how the cops are... Like, one of Grace's biggest roadblocks to getting the cops to investigate the mystery is not just, you know, the races of the two people involved, but, like, specifically the fact that she's a reporter who, like, her bread and butter is writing about police abuse and, like, the, you know, calling out the New York City police for their misdeeds. And so they don't take her seriously because... They don't like that she says bad things about them in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, oh, it's so just, like, it's so frustrating, the scene where they're just talking down to her.
Oh, my God, it's awful. It's so, like, especially when you as an audience member have information that they don't.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
This movie is just, it's so gross. It's so 70s gross.
Oh, it's so 70s gross. Yeah.
And, God. Like, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls was very 70s, but it wasn't 70s gross.
Truly.
This movie is filthy.
I love that bright red 70s fake blood.
Oh, it's so good. Every time someone gets stabbed in this movie, the blood is, like, pretty close to, like, hot pink.
It's, like,
Suspiria. It's hammer horror blood, and it's so good.
It's Suspiria blood. Like, it's...
Yes, oh my God.
That's, like, the first, like, when we see Philip's murder, like, the first time he gets stabbed, I was like, oh, that is Argento blood. baby.
Yeah. Dominique always is just going straight for the crotch, too.
Wonder what that could mean.
Wonder what that could mean.
Pervert cinema, baby.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I think that Dominique should be allowed to do whatever she wants to do, actually.
I agree. Can I say, I really admire Dominique's dedication to this, to the aesthetic, because, like, presumably, and, like, here's where we spoil everything having to do with Dominique and Danielle. So Dominique takes over while Danielle is wearing, like, a white nightdress. Hides under, changes into something black.
Yes.
For the aesthetic.
Well, no, she like puts a black sweater over the dress, because when she jumps out of the bed, she's still wearing that white nightdress.
Oh, okay. I didn't even notice that. I thought she went for like a full costume change.
No, but still. Like, yeah, that's the thing with watching this movie a second time, is that you start to notice those like little details.
Mm-hmm.
When she jumps out of the bed to go after Philip when he starts crawling away, yeah, she's wearing that black sweater over the white nightgown.
Okay, but she still made the conscious decision to like cover herself with a black something.
Yeah, she still put the sweater on.
She still put the sweater on to indicate to the audience that she is the evil twin.
She like messed up her hair too.
Yeah, and then like, I don't know, however long, much longer later, Danielle is back on the bathroom floor, like in the white nightdress. She took the sweater off. By the way,
her like perfectly coiffed 70s curls back to normal.
Oh, Margot Kidder is so beautiful.
I said this in my Letterboxd review, but I'm going to say it here too for posterity. I have such a weakness for girls with accents, and Margot Kidder in this movie did something to me.
Oh no. Yeah.
I just love an accent, and she's so pretty, and she kills people, and I like her French accent. That's all. I just needed to have a horny couple of seconds for Margot Kidder.
We all, like, need that. Like, we both need that, because I was watching her the whole movie just like, pretty lady.
She's so ridiculously beautiful. She's, oh my gorgeous. God.
So yeah, a little bit of a horny moment for Margot Kidder.
The opposite of horny minute.
Oh God.
Let's flip over to chat about Dr. Breton, like Emile, whatever his name is.
I personally can't believe that this movie has the same villain as Alice Madden's Returns.
Oh my God. I'm going to leave this call.
You know that song? I think the Lonely Island did it, that like Do the Creep song.
Yes.
He looks like every guy in that music video.
Oh my God. He totally does. So William Finley, most people know him from a different De Palma movie. He played Winslow, otherwise known as the Phantom, in Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh my God.
So, if you liked him in Phantom of the Paradise, have you ever wanted to see him play a creepy psychiatrist?
Have you ever wanted to see him play a freak?
Have you ever wanted to see him play an absolute freak? I can't even call him a little freak because he's like 8 feet tall.
Yeah, he's a big freak.
He's a large guy. He's a big freak. But he, you know, he's much like in Phantom of the Paradise. He's got those glasses that make his eyes look weird as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Brian De Palma just loves to shove those on.
God love him. I love William Finley. He's so fun in this movie because he's such a bastard.
Oh, he's just the worst. It's just the worst.
Is that one Tumblr post that's like, claps my hands together. Oh, I am such a bastard.
Truly. Oh, God. Like, from the minute this man shows up in the movie, you know he's fucking, like, trouble. You know he's a freak. Because he's, like, harassing her at the restaurant, which, like, at the microaggression restaurant.
The microaggression restaurant. I love the part right at the beginning where they give Philip the, like, you know, dinner for two at the African lounge or whatever it's called.
The African room. It's not the even African a lounge. Room,
yes. And, like, you literally just see his face and he's like, that's the one you chose, huh?
That's it, huh? That's the one you're giving me?
It's so funny. Oh, I literally God. Just microaggressions, like, oh God, it's so funny. Yeah, it's so he awful. Shows up at the African room.
I literally just have a note that says, not the African room.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, he shows up at the African room. And at that point, like, you don't really know what's going on. So, like, you kind of take Danielle at her word when she says, like, oh, he's my ex-husband and he won't leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah. Like, I don't know. To me, it's very funny, the idea, like, if she had been, like, I guess not telling the truth because she thought it was the truth because of all the, like, hypnosis and mind fuckery that he was putting her through. But, like, if she had been speaking accurately, like, the idea that he would have literally just, like, followed her from Canada after they broke up. Because they both have the, like, French-Canadian accents, so it's
yeah. Just,
it's very funny to
yeah.
Philip's a real G, though. He's, like, such a king.
Oh, he's such a king. See, here's the thing. I was going through this movie, and I was like, I don't want to make judgments. I think these two are really cute, but I think something's gonna happen. And boy, did something fucking happen.
Yeah, man, something happened.
I was so like, I want to say they're cute, but I'm afraid to because I know what kind of movie this is.
Philip is so sweet, though. Like,
he deserves better. He's such an
he's delightful. He's, like,
he bought her a cake.
He fucking sleeps with this random girl that he meets because he gets, like, on some candid camera game show. And he, like, the next day she is, like, freaking out and she's just randomly like, can you go to the pharmacy and pick me up my prescription?
Which, by the way, can I just say, $7.68 for meds.
Oh, God. I know.
I hate it here.
The 70s, man.
The 70s.
Those pills are bright ass red, though.
Oh, they're so... I thought they looked like ibuprofen.
They looked like Red Hots. They probably were Red Hots, honestly.
I was going to say they probably were Red Hots.
Yeah, they probably were some sort of, like, cinnamon candy, but I also like the, like, clear pill bottles. You don't really get those anymore.
Yeah.
I love when I, like, watch movies that are, like, from the past and I, like, just get caught up on, like, the tiny little, like, everyday details.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, oh, that's so funny that the pill bottles are clear.
Cinematic parallels to those pills going down the drain and Adam's key going down the drain in Saw.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that's like the first thing I thought of.
God, when he knocked those pills down the drain, I was like, oh no.
Oh, something bad. Yep. I literally, when she put the pills on the side of the sink, I was like, those aren't staying there.
Yeah, those, like the very pointed shot of her putting the pills on the side like, of the sink. It's like, oh girl. Oh girl, no. But yeah, like, I love how, like, down he is for whatever. Like, she's like, okay, can you go pick up my prescription? And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then she's like, okay, by the way, my sister is coming over because it's our birthday today. And he's like, oh, okay. And not only is he, like, down to hang out with her and her sister on their birthday, he, like, fully goes to a bakery and gets them a birthday cake.
He's such a king.
He's a king. R.I.P. to a true king. Like,
R.I.P. to an absolute king.
He's such a gentleman. Not only is he like, oh, okay, that's cool. He's like, I can and will buy you a birthday cake and write your name on it.
Can I say those two bakery ladies are definitely married?
I was gonna say those are lesbians.
Those are lesbians. The way she literally says, oh, my girlfriend and I read your column all the time. I'm like, I know what you are.
He literally turned into the homophobic dog.
He's, I was like, I know what you are. At
these two elderly women, like, I know what you are.
I know what you are. I know you're not saying girlfriend in the heterosexual way.
It's so funny. I also love how the one lady, like, there's the bit where she's like, oh, do you really want me to write on the cake? You know, like, I'm bad at it or whatever. And then later when Grace goes to like, investigate at the bakery, like, one of the first things that she says is like, yeah, the writing on the cake was real shitty. It was like it was a really child wrote it.
Oh my god, the scene of her dropping the cake is such a, like, I literally wrote no in my notes because I was like, damn it, the only, like, evidence that she had, it's such a, like, visceral moment of, like, oh no.
Oh my god, I know. The first time I saw this movie, I got so upset when she dropped
it's
that cake.
It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating.
I fucking love Grace. I know I said it before.
I love her too. She's so smart is the thing. Like the thing with the cake, I literally just finished writing like, oh my god, she's so smart to like find that cake and then look for like the box that it came in and the address of the bakery so she would have that information.
She's so good. Like, I don't know. I just love her a lot. And like, she is smart in like a very realistic way.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, she's not too smart in a way where it feels like the protagonist is like, you know, sometimes when you watch a movie and you're like, oh, the protagonist knows this because the author knows this.
Mm-hmm.
No, like deductions or anything that she ever made felt like that.
Yeah, she's smart in a way that you would expect someone in that profession to be. Someone who's, like, used to hunting down details, or who at least wants to be the kind of person who hunts down details.
She's cool as fuck. Shame about what happened to her at the end of this movie.
Yeah, also, her, like, leather coat is very good.
I loved her red pajamas.
The brown leather coat, like, yes, thank you. I will take 20.
I would also like to have a brief moment, not only for Danielle's white nightgown, which we've mentioned, but the pink robe that she wears over it.
Oh my god, yes. So I was just watching that scene like, I want that robe.
That pink silk robe. Oh my god. I love it.
Oh, to be like a mentally ill waif wandering around my white minimalist apartment in my pink, like, white. In my pink silk nightgown after I just killed someone.
Yeah, like, wish that was me.
By the way, Danielle did invent the white minimalist apartment, apparently.
Oh, yeah. She was living that girl influencer life back in 1972.
I say this for every 70s movie we do, but I always love the way that, like, movies from the 70s use colors and patterns as part of their set design.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's so good. Like, I always think of, like, geometric patterns when I think of 70s movies. And they're always, like, so visually cool to look at.
Yeah, I love the... I mean, honestly, like, one of the things that I love about 70s movies, especially these, like, 70s New York movies, is, like, everything is so grimy.
Mm-hmm.
I just love it. Like, Basket Case kind of does this too, but Basket Case is early 80s, but like, my point kind of still stands. It's that like grimy, gross. Maniac also is a really good one for like gross New York. Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer is Chicago, but it's similar. The vibes are similar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just really like that like sleazy city aesthetic. I just, you know.
It's very good.
Wouldn't want to live there during that period, but it sure is fun to look back on it through the magic of the movies.
Sure is. Yeah, listen, I can do it through a screen. That's fine.
Yeah. So, this movie's ending.
Yeah, Taylor, let's talk about the ending.
Yeah, let's talk about the last third
of the movie.
Let's have
a little chat.
Just, I mean, if you thought the first two thirds were weird.
Can I just say, my favorite, like, this kind of horror is very difficult to, like, do in, like, a cheesy, fun kind of way, because you risk accidentally towing the line into, like, actual mental illness stuff and becoming problematic, quote-unquote. But my favorite workaround that both Brian De Palma and James Wan did in their films is to just make everything so batshit insane that it could not possibly mirror real life.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Like, this is so wildly insane that it could never be offensive because it's just so removed from reality.
Yeah, it's so in its own world of just complete and utter insanity that, like, nothing in this movie is real enough to offend anybody.
Exactly.
I love just how balls to the wall this movie gets once Grace gets to the mental hospital.
Mm-hmm. I love the style of the flashbacks that they do.
I know, it's so delightful.
Like, it's in, like, black and white, but also the transition is, like, that that sort of, oh, I can't remember what it's called. The, like, I want to say fisheye, but that's not right. The, like, fade in and out with the circle. Fuck, what is it called? But I love that they're in that, like, black and white style. It feels almost like an old horror movie.
Yeah, and, like, it starts off kind of, like, rooted in reality, because the first time you see that style in the movie is when Grace is watching that documentary about Danielle and Dominique.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, again, Malignant, that's just Malignant. Like, Malignant took that from, like, the VHS of, like, Madison and Gabriel being interviewed. Like, that's just, it's just the same thing. It's the same vibe, rather. It's not the exact same thing, but the vibe is there.
But then, like, towards the end of the movie, like, every time there's a flashback, it just does that weird black and white style.
And it, there's, like, three flashbacks, like, in a row. Because Emil is hypnotizing, I believe it's Danielle, to, like, remember all of the bullshit. And I want you to imagine that with capitalizations that happened in her and Dominique's past. I did have to look up, like, the Wikipedia article at the end to be like, wait, is the twist that Grace is Dominique? No, that's not it.
It does kind of do this weird thing where it, like, Grace, like, as she is hypnotized, like, ends up, like, inserting herself into the flashbacks as Dominique.
Yeah.
Which is fun. He's like that
hypnotizing Grace. I don't know why I said Danielle. It's because he starts, like, perving on Danielle, like, right after he's done hypnotizing Grace. Because, you know, he wasn't already being enough of a freak. He had to just, like, you know, do it again.
Yeah, like, any woman in this movie, Dr. Brayton is like, it's free real estate.
I hate him.
He sucks. But William Finley is truly having the time of his life.
Oh, absolutely. You can tell.
And I love it for him. I am very glad. Him just, like, skulking around outside of Danielle's apartment at the beginning of the movie was so...
Oh my god! What a fucking creep!
And, like, after he had already interrupted the meal at the microaggression restaurant, and he's, like, lurking around her apartment after the fact, and Philip is like, does your ex-husband usually, like, creep around outside of your house?
And, like, king that he is, he offers to be like, hey, I'll drive around and, like, make sure he's not doing any shit.
Once again, Philip's a fucking, he's a G, he's a king.
Love this for him. R.I.P. to a true king.
R.I. fucking P. In the arms of the angel. Fly away.
F's in chat. I will say, I did kind of get spoiled on the twist because I went to Letterboxd and saw Margaret Kidder listed as Dominique and Danielle. And I was like, God, but it was like right before the twist happened. So I spent most of the, but it was, yeah, I had paused to, like, check something, and then I went to Letterboxd to see, like, just to, like, read through some reviews, and I saw that, and I was like, damn it, if I had just been patient.
I also do like that De Palma does the, like, psycho shout-out of the conversation that Danielle and Dominique have just off-screen.
Yes.
Which is a pretty, like, blatant shout-out to the scene in Psycho where Marion overhears Norman and his mother arguing in the house.
See, when I heard that, my brain was still, like, on Malignant. And, like, right afterwards is, like, when she kind of collapses onto the bathroom floor. I swear to God, I thought we were going to get, like, a full-on Cronenberg, like, shot of some, like, hideous little Dominique, like, crawling out of the
No, it's not quite that type of movie.
No, it's not. I was thinking of the wrong kind of pervert movie.
No, you were thinking of Basket Case.
I was. I actually have never seen Basket Case, though.
I feel like you can trace, like, a direct line from Psycho to Sisters to Basket Case to Malignant.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
There's a direct line of influence there.
Mm-hmm.
And not just in terms of being awesome.
And also not just in terms of being pervert movies. Although, yeah. Malignant isn't really a pervert movie. It's just fucking insane.
Yeah, it's just wackadoo.
Malignant is kind of like you took Sisters and Psycho and Basket Case and kind of removed the pervert element and just kept all... But you kept all the crazy... Can we talk about, like, that lady in the insane asylum who just, like, for no reason decided this is the moment I am going to go for my Oscar?
Yeah, she was slaying.
Like, she...
just like a bit character who is there to like be an obstacle for Grace. And this lady was like, I am going to win best supporting actress in a best actress in a supporting role.
She was giving. Her performance was everything.
She was like screaming. I'm like, ma'am, how did you do several takes of that?
She was hooting and hollering.
Good for her.
Yeah, I love her.
She knew her moment. She knew what her moment was.
I'm also like so suspicious at how quickly that other doctor was just like down to believe that Grace was a patient.
See, I would believe it if you told me that like Emil had hypnotized him too, and he just like has
you know
the staff
what?
Of this
Honestly,
hospital
yeah.
under his little freak hypnotism thing. I the way that like the hypnotism is brought in is like a like within the last third of this movie, they're just like, oh, by the way, magic hypnotism works. It's not actually magic, but like it might as well be for.
I mean, it's magic adjacent in that, like, I mean, hypnosis doesn't really work like that.
No. It's hypnosis through the lens of pervert.
Yeah, hypnosis can't actually make you do anything that you wouldn't normally do.
So if you wouldn't normally murder people, it could not make you do that.
Yeah, you can't use hypnosis as a legal defense in court.
Or I suppose if it's like, if you wouldn't normally not do murder, hypnosis can't make you stop doing murder.
That, you know, true.
So true, bestie.
So true, bestie. There, here's the thing. When I was a kid, I would watch these like documentaries that were like on demand about like magicians and stuff. And one of the things was about like stage hypnosis. And I remembered a story that one of the magicians told. This is like completely off topic, but like, it's like fine. Like in like the 60s, like some boxer like basically like called him up and was like, "Can you hypnotize me so that I can't feel punches?"
Oh my god.
And so I'll just like win boxing matches. And he was like, that sounds very unethical. And that's also not how hypnosis works.
That's not how it works.
Also, like, I'm a stage magician. I'm not like, I don't have magic powers. And he was, yeah, I think I just remember watching that when I was like 10 or something and being like, that's fucking insane. Anyway, that's just a story I felt like telling. Hypnosis like in this movie just works however the writers want it to work.
Yeah, this guy could hypnotize somebody to not feel pain. And probably would, because he's a freak.
Yeah, the scene where Grace, like, walks up to the window, and I can't even describe what was happening in there.
Freaky murder sex?
Freaky murder sex. That's about the best way to describe what was happening there.
I'm sorry, I just came across my, like, second to last note. It's just, I'm not writing notes because I'm fucking glued to the screen.
Yeah, right? Like, you can't like, tear your eyes away from this movie.
It's so much.
It's, like, everything. It's everything. And it never lets up for a second. It's a tight 90.
Oh, we love a tight 90.
The thing that cracks me up is that, like, because obviously I haven't seen this movie in a couple of years. So, like, when they were cleaning up the apartment, I, for some reason, was thinking to myself, like, oh, this is, like, you know, it's been, like, a half hour. And it had been, like, a half hour, but it was also, like, very close to halfway through the movie.
Yeah, I it flies by.
It really does. Like, it's so funny how fast this movie goes. In, like, a good way, though.
Yeah, the pacing is tight.
Yeah, you're just kind of, like, boom, 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 going from one thing to the next. And it's never, like, I mean, it is at times kind of disorienting, but never, like, in a bad way. Like, only when it's intentionally disorienting.
Yeah, when it's supposed to be. When you're supposed to be feeling that with the
like
characters.
Like, at the end.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god, like I said, I had to look at the Wikipedia to, like, get the actual, like, full brunt of the twist.
That would be really funny if Grace was secretly Dominique. That would be...
Because I was like, that can't be the actual twist, because, like...
Because Grace wasn't in the apartment.
Yeah, we see her and Danielle in, like, the same room, like, together on screen. So it can't be, like, one of those things, so... And I had misread, like, I thought that yeah, I just misread the whole, like, cast list thing, too. So it was just a whole big bundle of confusion, and I think that added to my experience watching this movie, frankly.
Yeah, this movie does a really good job, especially the ending, of making you feel like Grace, who is, you know, hypnotized and disoriented and, like, zonked out. The feeling of the flashbacks is, like, super meant to put you into that headspace, and I love the way that De Palma plays with those, like, feelings of disorientation.
There's especially, like, a shot during, we see the surgery that she and the Danielle and Dominique went through to get separated. And, like, the private detective is the guy that hands him the knife.
Yes.
And it's, like, it's clearly just there just to be, like, disorienting, just to kind of, like, blur the line between reality and what, and whatever this fucking hypnotism shit is. But I fell for it hook, line, and sinker. I was like, oh my god, is he actually in on it too? It's like,
he was in on it the whole time! No.
No, he wasn't.
No, Grace is just completely zonked out of her mind.
Yeah.
I also really enjoy the, speaking of the, like, disorientation and like, at the end of the movie, I like the POV shot when Dr. Brayton is hypnotizing Grace, where it's, like, again, it's, like, that weird, like, fisheye lens thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where he, it, like, distorts his face, but it's, like, a POV shot from Grace on the bed. And it's, like, oh, God, why is William Finn so close to me?
Oh, God, why is he here?
Get him away!
No, thank you!
William Finn is, like, staring down the barrel of the camera with his glasses that make his eyes look tiny.
It's terrifying.
It's so scary! Like, no, get away! You feel like Grace!
Ugh.
It also is just, like, so interesting, the, like, the social subtext of this movie in terms of the ending, where, like, and I'm gonna kind of go off a little bit, so, like, whatever.
Go but for it.
This idea that, like, throughout the entire movie, Grace is never taken seriously in her investigations. Not just by the police, but also, like, by her mother, by the people she interviews, like, whatever. Like, the only person who really takes her seriously is the private investigator guy. But society at large is always telling Grace, like, come on, little lady, like, you don't need to be looking into these murders or whatever.
Her mom,
and
maybe.
But then by the end of this movie, she's been so utterly mentally fucked over by all of the gaslighty hypnosis nonsense that Dr. Brayton did to her, that she now fully believes that there was no murder and has no interest in investigating murder. She's exactly what society wants her to be.
Yep. And to add insult to injury, the police want to take her seriously now.
Yeah. And she can't give them any information.
Oh,
she just can only repeat the, like, canned lines that Dr. Brayton fed her when he was hypnotizing her. Like, there was no body because there was no murder.
Yep.
It's just so, it's so sad. It's like, horrible. Well, this is what you wanted her to be, isn't it? This is what the world wants out of women.
Are you happy now?
And no one's happy.
Nope.
Danielle's arrested. Grace is, like, completely mentally
mind-fucked.
And Dr. Brayton is dead, and they'll never find out more about his experiments from him. But at least we got to see another crotch stab from Dominique.
Good for her.
Dominique doing that. Listen, she should be allowed to do the crotch stabs.
She should be allowed to stab as many crotches as she wants.
Exactly. Insert obligatory, oh, I'd let her do whatever she wanted to my crotch here.
Yeah. I was trying to be restrained. I was trying to be restrained and not say I will offer my crotch as sacrifice.
You know what? This is a horny podcast. We can say whatever we want.
That's true. That's very true.
Margot Kidder slayed. Literally and figuratively.
She has the range.
She does have the range, is the thing. I can't believe there are people who only know her as Lois Lane.
That's insane. See, I knew her from Black Christmas.
Like, she did stuff like this. She, like you said, she did Black Christmas. Like, She did so many, like, weird, interesting movies, and people only knew her as Lois Lane.
And those people are what we call cowards.
Yeah, they are. They're absolute cowards. Watch Sisters.
Watch Black Christmas.
A lot of people on Letterboxd were making fun of her accent. I didn't think it was that bad. But then again, I'm not French. I don't really know anyone who's French, so...
I will say that I thought at one point, like, I thought it was going to be revealed that she was faking it.
That would be really funny. I didn't think it was that bad.
It's not a great accent.
I'd say William Finn's accent was worse than hers.
Yeah, I mean, that's also not a great accent.
His accent was rough and tumble, man.
Sometimes I was like, is he doing an accent?
Yeah, it kind of wavered a little bit. And by wavered, I mean, like, completely slipped in and out of being an accent at all.
Yeah.
Very Cary Elwes of him, I must
say. So Cary Elwes of him. Oh my god.
I think they should remake this movie and have Cary Elwes play Dr. Brayton.
But he has to be, they have to change it so he's American doing, so his character is American. So he can
Just, like, so that he can do the Lawrence Gordon voice again.
Yeah.
Listen, I've said it once, I'll say it again. Cary Elwes' agent fucking hates him because.
That's true.
That man can't do accents, but he keeps getting cast in roles where he has to do accents. Oh, The Christmas Castle.
What a film.
And that's cinema, baby. The thing about William Finn, though, is, like, Phantom of the Paradise, he's also just, like, absolutely delightful.
I haven't actually seen Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, it's so good! I'm gonna make you watch that one day.
I've seen the nostalgic review of it.
Oh,
way
no!
Back when. That's it.
Rip and rip to those videos.
That's my entire exposure to Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, Phantom of the Paradise is very good. Jessica Harper's in that.
Okay. I kept thinking, watching this movie, and it could have just been the hair. Like, Margot Kidder and Jessica Harper really look similar. Am I wrong?
No, they absolutely do. You're so right. I didn't even notice, but, like, oh, man, Brian De Palma has a type, doesn't he?
He sure does.
Oh, man.
I kept, like, watching. I was like, she looks like Susie Banyan.
Yeah, between Margot Kidder, Jessica Harper, Amy Irving and Carrie.
Oh, yeah.
He likes his green-eyed brunettes.
I also like my green-eyed brunettes, unfortunately.
He likes his green... Oh, yes, I know you do. I know you like your green-eyed brunettes.
I just love them. I can't help it. I have two of them, and I love them both so much.
Brian De Palma and you. Handshake emoji. Handshake green-eyed emoji. Brunettes.
No, it's like those... It's like those... That, like, one meme with, like, the beefy arms clasping.
Yes. Green-eyed brunettes. Yeah, I didn't even notice that, but yeah, Brian De Palma really does have a type.
Good for him.
Yeah,
his type is also my type.
Hitchcock had his blue-eyed blondes, you know. Brian De Palma's allowed to have his green-eyed brunettes.
Precisely.
I just love it for him.
Don't we all?
You want to read some Letterboxd reviews?
Taylor, I would love to read some Letterboxd reviews.
Okay. So, I do a segment on this podcast called Live, Laugh, Letterboxd, where I read funny Letterboxd reviews, and our first review today comes from Patrick Willems, who says, amazing choice to set this on Staten Island. 4 stars. I want some sort of crossover situation where Danielle runs into the What We Do in the Shadows vampires.
I was thinking when they said it was Staten Island, I was like, crossover, baby.
You were like, oh, ho, ho.
I was like, Staten Island, ho, ho. The gay people are there.
The gay vampires live there. Ben McDonald says, that feeling when you just want to give your cute French-Canadian one-night stand a birthday cake. 3 stars.
R.I.P. to our king, Philip. Like,
truly, truly. He was just doing his best.
He was just being nice.
Laura says, maybe not necessary to carry the knife with you when surprising a sleeping girl with a birthday cake. Just a thought. Love the split screens. 3.5 stars.
Okay, also, maybe not a great idea to, like, put the cake with the lit candles right near her head. Sir,
yeah, that was uncomfortably close to somewhere it could have caught on fire.
Sir, there are, like 3 different places it could catch on fire here. Please do not do that.
Cherry says, men will literally gaslight, hypnotize, and sedate you instead of explaining why they're still talking to their ex. 3 stars.
So fucking true. So fucking true. Ladies, don't let this happen to you.
This is a cautionary tale for women everywhere. Dante says, Dead Ringers for women, 3.5 stars.
So true, Bessie.
I know you haven't seen Dead Ringers, I don't think, but...
No, I haven't, but I trust your judgment, and you mentioned it earlier, so...
It's Cronenberg, horny twins, played by Jeremy Irons.
It's always the twins. Like, it's always the twins. I was saying this to my brother earlier. Like, it's always the twins in these pervert movies.
Yeah. It's a fun movie. It is pervert cinema, though. That one's pervert cinema, too. Santi says, every opening credits sequence ever should be set to pictures of conjoined twin fetuses while dramatic violins play in the background. 3.5 stars.
I agree 100%.
Oh my god, the opening credits of this movie are so funny.
I want to say that I was watching this movie on my back porch, and it was turned up at first very loud because my parents watch things out there, and my mom is hard of hearing. So it was like, loud, scary violins coming from the back of my porch, and I hope my neighbors appreciated that one.
I'm sure they did, and if they'd have been able to see the screen, they would have seen pictures of fetuses. Nicole says, I'm such a damn freak for De Palma. Watching this the night after The Brood was a bonkers choice, but I recommend them paired together. 4 stars. Now, I want to know.
That is the best double feature anyone has ever made.
I feel like if you watched these movies back to back, they would break. It would break your brain.
It would break your brain. Like, it would just scramble your brain like an egg.
In the best way possible, though.
Truly.
Jacob says, oh, to be fucked by Margot Kidder in a swanky 70s apartment and then stabbed to death immediately after. 4 stars.
That's the dream. That's how I want to go out.
That's how I want to go out, too. Once again. She's a very pretty lady.
So pretty.
And finally, Gabriel, ironic, says, oh my god, get these girls and the basket case boys together and you'd have a pair of power couples.
So fucking true.
No stars, just a heart, but if anyone out here is into writing fan fiction, write that crossover for me, please.
Give us this.
I just want to see it happen, man.
Please. All right, Taylor, what is your star rating for this movie?
I gotta give it 5 stars. Like, this is once again, like, this is made for me.
This is Taylor cinema.
This movie was cooked up in a lab with the express purpose of appealing directly to me.
And it's valid for that.
I gotta give it five stars.
I, on the other hand, will give it 4, because while it is not me cinema, it is incredibly good. Batshit insane pervert cinema, and I can only ever give that 4 stars. Sorry, that's my rating.
Y'all should watch it. It's very good.
Yes, pair it with like Malignant or Basket Case or The Brood.
Or The Brood, yeah. If you want to go insane like that person on Letterboxd did.
Yeah, or Psycho. Psycho is also.
A good one. Yeah, that would be a good one.
All right. So next time, we do not have any of those movies to pair it with, but we do have what I think is also a very good movie to pair this with. We'll be watching Jordan Peele's Us, a movie about me and Taylor.
The story of our lives.
Yep.
It simply is. And, you know, thank you, Jordan Peele, for that.
Thank you, Jordan Peele, for giving us this very important representation. Of two people who are just the same person.
Yep. She's my dark tethered, and I am hers.
And until then, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And if you like what we did here today, you can give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or do whatever it is you need to do on your podcast platform of choice to let us know you enjoyed our little show. And we will see you next time for Us. Bye, guys.
Bye.